Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join in on the phone, online, or via a text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS on a Wednesday, the second day of May. And glad to be back. Thank you to Scott Beatty for sitting in yesterday. As he mentioned, I had dad duty, went down to Nashville and picked up my daughter from her college. She's finished her junior year down at Belmont University down in Nashville, Tennessee. So drove down there, Monday evening, at least halfway, and then the rest of the way yesterday morning, and then loaded everything up, left Nashville about 4:30, drove 6 hours back, unloaded the two cars, and got to bed about midnight. So here we are. And if I'm half awake, that's probably why. But I used to be able to do that a lot easier years ago. But I'm getting a little older, I guess. That takes a toll on you after a while. But anyway, it was fun to get her back and got all that taken care of yesterday. So again, thanks to Scott for sitting in on the show. Our guest today will be Justice Robert Steigman. You know him, of course, from the appellate court. And we usually have him on occasion here as we sprinkle him in throughout the months. And he's been doing this a long, long time. So Judge Robert Steigman will be with us for both hours here starting in just a couple of minutes after our opening timeout. Of course, lots of things to talk about. You've got Robert Mueller, Donald Trump, Benjamin Netanyahu's presentation. Alan Dershowitz was in recently. Migrants at the border. Those are all great topics. If you have something you want to bring up, feel free to do that. I know the judge always has lots of things he brings to the table as well. He's laid them all out, so we will cover all the ground we can here in a couple of hours this morning. So we'll take our opening timeout. We'll come back, and we'll get it started here on A Penny for Your Thoughts. By the way, happy birthday, 50th birthday to my sister. My sister Angie, born on this day 50 years ago today, right? May 2nd, 1968. So there we go. I got a 50-year-old younger sister now. We're at 9:07. We'll come back with a Penny for Your Thoughts. And Judge Steigman, get your phone calls ready, 356-9397. You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, or email us at talk at WDWS.com. We'll get it rolling after this. Penny for Your Thoughts, here News Talk 1400 DWS. Want to remind you to support your favorite business, service, or pastime by voting in the News Talk 1400 DWS. The People's Choice, your favorite law firm, radio station, barbecue place, manicure place, golf course, auto dealership, or any of 144 other categories. Vote at WDWS.com, the People's Choice from News Gazette Media and Central Illinois Credit Union. And also tell you that the Woods family has helped over 55,000 homeowners since 1986. They've been doing this a long, long time. Protect your home's investment. Make sure you have your basement and crawl space cracks fixed once and for all. What are the signs of a basement foundation problem? They can be found inside on drywall, outside in masonry. Two things are true, though. They get worse if you ignore them. They do not fix themselves. So don't put your head in the sand there and ignore it. And they keep stealing value from your home until the cause is fixed. They're proud of many things. They've received several awards Woods Basement Systems has over the years, but the Better Business Bureau Torch Awards, they're the proudest of those. So remember, Woods estimates do not cost you anything. How much is it costing you to not fix that problem? Call Woods Basement Systems for your free estimate today, 888-935-4333, or go online to woodsbasementsystems.com. We are here with Judge Robert Steigman. He has his... Is that Starbucks you got there?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. You're wired and
all set to go.
Ready to go.
So good morning.
Well, yeah, good to see you again. We will take your comments and questions for the judge today, 356-9397. And you can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357, and email us talk at WDWS.com. Last time I saw Judge Steigman, he was with me at the same event. Alan Dershowitz was speaking over at the Folinger Auditorium.
That's correct.
It was a very fascinating evening, I thought.
He's a terrific speaker. He's a very interesting guy. He speaks very well. And one of the things I really like about him that is missing from so much of today's discussion is he can disagree with you. He can disagree with Republicans or conservatives without alleging or implying that they're moral reprobates. One of the difficulties with modern political dialogue is, as a conservative, I believe liberals and those holding progressive views are wrong, but from their point of view, too often, the liberals and the progressives view conservatives not just as wrong, but as evil. You know, so it's hard to have this dialogue, and Dershowitz was a throwback to a time when this wasn't so. He could disagree spiritedly, but his disagreements are always well thought out, and he really made some good case, and he's also consistent, which I really admire. Mm-hmm. As he pointed out, he says, I'm not a Trump supporter. I didn't vote for him. I voted for Hillary, and I'm a Democrat, and I'm a liberal, and I wish Hillary had won the election. But as he put it, I'm being consistent. If the system is being abused, I don't care who it is, who's the abuser, and if the abusiveness of the system is hurting a guy I disagree with politically, I'm still going to speak against it because I think the system has to be protected. Yeah. So he's very consistent and very thoughtful.
Yeah, that's the consistency is what I like too. I mean, if you may have a different viewpoint,
right,
but if you're consistent in it and you've got some facts that you present to back them up, then I'm more willing to listen, you know, if I'm on the other
of
side
course.
Or whatever side you're on.
As opposed to the old line, shut up, he explained.
Yeah.
That's not Dershowitz. He would explain it, and I thought did a very nice job.
Yeah. Anything else stood out to you about things he talked about?
Well, yes. There was the one thing where I disagreed with him, and I thought his analysis wasn't enough. It's always a little tricky to talk about cases, not just that might go to the U.S. Supreme Court, but are now there under advisement. But it's the case of the baker that people talk about, and that is where a Christian baker refused to bake a particular cake for a gay wedding, and he was charged with a violation of I think it was in Colorado state anti-discrimination laws, and that's the issue before the Supreme Court. It's a claim of First Amendment religious freedom. Mm-hmm. There's a distinction in this issue that not a lot of people appreciate it. And I think a way to look at it is this. We have rules against discriminating in accommodations or sales based upon race, for instance, or it would be sexual preferences or the like. If you walk into a store and you want to buy a set of tires or you want to buy some groceries or you want to order a sandwich over a counter, you know, I still remember it, the Kresge lunch counter days, and they wouldn't serve black folks. We're beyond that now. You can't do that. If you are a public service or public accommodation, you can't decline to serve people on the basis of the race or religion or other suspect categories. If you're a baker, and if I run a bake shop and Brian Barnhart comes on in and he wishes to buy a dozen cookies, I can't refuse to sell them to you on racial grounds, let's say, or some black customer. Mm-hmm. This would be a violation of that. But what happened in this case, and it's a little different, is we're talking about at what point is it no longer kind of buying the routine thing, but you're talking about being creative. Now, what do I mean by that? I don't know much about baking, but wedding cakes are sometimes more creative. They're big to do, and they're made specially. And another way of looking at this would be, you know, there's a Christian baker didn't want to bake a cake for gay folks. What about this? You can identify, and I think some parts of New York are clearly identified. You have a Jewish baker. Kosher baker. And turns out it's going to be soon, I think, the 125th anniversary of the birth of Der Fuhrer. Mm-hmm. and some neo-Nazis for fun go into that office or the bake shop and say to the kosher baker, we want to have a special birthday cake for Dafir, and we want it to be put together in this fashion, happy birthday, Dafir, and a swastika on top. And he says, I don't want to do that. This is contrary to my religious beliefs, and otherwise I shouldn't have to do that. I don't want to. And what about another situation? We have in Dearborn, Michigan, I think, Muslim bakers. We have some now significant Muslim community. A tenet of Islam is you're not supposed to portray Muhammad at all. And some guys want to have some fun with him. They walk in, they said, we're going to have a big birthday celebration. We want you to bake a cake to honor Muhammad. And we want to put some writing on it, and we want to have a figure we want you to bake into the cake on top. The point being, this is not just a routine over-the-counter sale, but you're required to use your creativity. What about a guy who is a portrait artist? There are still portrait artists, by the way. That is, in Illinois, every Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court has his or her portrait painted, and it's hung in the Supreme Court building. Mm-hmm. So there are these people. Can a portrait artist discriminate on the basis of a race or religion or some other basis? Well, what about the portrait artist? He's Jewish and says, we want you to paint a picture of Hitler for 125th birthday. Or we want you to paint a picture to the Muslim guy of Muhammad. We'll give you a picture and we want you to label this Muhammad. The point being, I think this is a trickier and different case than just the normal, we're walking into a bake shop and ordering a cake or some cookies, and what's the problem? Which is kind of how Dershowitz described it. And if it were that case, I don't think it would have made it to the Supreme Court. And one of the problems with the Supreme Court is this. As I know, being on the appellate court, you have to be careful when you decide cases to understand your decision will affect this case, of course, but you're also establishing precedent for other cases. So if the Supreme Court were to say this Christian baker must, it was a violation of civil rights for him to decline to do this, bake this cake for the gay wedding, at what point can you then say, but we didn't mean that the Jewish baker is going to have to bake a cake for the Fuhrer? And if not, why not?
So the Supreme Court just heard that recently.
They did.
They'll come out in June, right? The end of June?
If not before, but certainly within 2 months. And it'll be interesting to see. And the news media hasn't really captured this aspect of it very well. That is, the difference between requiring someone to use his creative talents for a particular purpose that he doesn't want, as opposed to you just walking into a store and you're just purchasing something.
356-9397. We are at 921. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 3515-357, and email us talk@wdws.com. Of course, a lot of news here in the last couple of days with Robert Mueller and the continued probe, and I guess what the New York Times got a hold of potential questions, line of questioning that was being discussed between the attorneys for the president and for the special counsel office. How do you see all that happening, and what do you make of all of that, I guess, the latest? What does it mean?
Well, it's hard to know. There's no precedent for anything like this, and now they're talking about subpoenaing the president, and people said, well, he could. What?
He can do that, right?
I don't know. I think We're in uncharted waters. No one can really say with certainty how this all works. But it's a troubling business. I've been involved in law enforcement, one capacity or another, for almost 50 years. I've known lots of FBI people who have been wonderful, and I think continue to be wonderful. Certainly the line troops, so to speak, the people who are out doing their jobs. I'm very troubled by what the last several months has revealed about memos and discussions and behavior and conduct by the highest ranks of the FBI, Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and some of these other people. You know, how do I put this? When you're in law enforcement, and when you're on the bench for that matter, people should have the right to expect that, you know, you can rise above your personal views because you're in a higher calling. And the FBI really is the highest, and we want to be able to have lots of confidence in it. And this stuff doesn't look good. I remember on this show when Comey started having these press conferences, and I said then, and I'll repeat now, here's how it works. And by the way, we have an example of what I'm saying locally. How should it work? The way it works is the FBI keeps its mouth shut and says nothing, and the U.S. attorney, who is the prosecutor in charge of cases, keeps its mouth shut and says nothing. How do we know how that works? Well, we have a what's called a heater case locally. Heater case being one generating lots of publicity. The disappearance and, I guess, the death of the Chinese scholar here locally. Mm-hmm. It's terrible business. It's been going on almost a year. And what do we know about that case? Almost nothing. Which is, and by the way, it's frustrating for the media and it's frustrating for the citizens, but that's the way the system is supposed to work. The government reveals, doesn't hold press conferences, doesn't say what they're doing, doesn't say what they're not going to do. And in due course, because this is a serious matter, it will be presented in court where it's supposed to be. Compare that to what's going on with the whole business with Comey holding press conferences about what they're investigating. By the way, that's another first for me. You know, I've been involved in watching this stuff for a long time. I've never seen the FBI do something like this before. I didn't understand it then. Holding exoneration press conferences and then saying our investigation is over. That's not the function of the FBI in any event ever. It's always supposed to be the function of the U.S. attorney. And typically, if the U.S. attorney's office is conducting an investigation, they won't even admit it. But the most they would ever say, and I've seen this a few times, is to say reports of the investigation into Brian Barnhart, we will confirm and now say it's over. That's it.
That's what they're supposed to do.
That's what they're supposed to do. And this whole business is very troubling, very disturbing. I think it's sapping the public's confidence in the FBI and the Department of Justice as being an independent, reliable agency. The one last thing I'd want to say about all this is I agree completely with Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal, who had an article not long ago in the Journal about what Trump should do. And what he should do is this. He's chief of the executive branch of government. Nothing is unavailable to him. There's no such thing as classified. The president can't see it. But another part of that is the president has total authority on what shall remain classified. Given this fiasco of months and months, and it could have been over a year, this collusion case and what happened in the FISA warrant, what Kimberly Strasser said, I totally agree, and I've been calling for it for a longer time, is this. Donald Trump should order everything declassified and released now. Everything. All the FISA warrant application, he can do it. Now, people would say, oh, we can't do that. Yes, he can, and he should. There's been all this discussion and innuendo about what happened and who said what. Now's the time. Let the public see it all. Let the chips fall where they may. To what extent was the Steele dossier relied on? Well, let's see. And I don't understand why Trump hasn't done this. People called on him to do it. And here's the last thing at this point. I don't understand why it is Congress can't get information from the Department of Justice that they want, you know, these records and so forth. They even threatened to hold Rodstein in contempt.
Rosenstein. Yeah.
And Donald Trump could issue an order this minute saying to the Department of Justice, not only turn it over to Congress, release it publicly, all of this stuff. And I don't know why it doesn't, Brian.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've got callers waiting and a couple of texts in. We'll do all that next after this quick timeout. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS. Just ahead of the news headlines here with Michael Kaiser, let's go to Tiny. Hey, Tiny, good morning.
Good morning. I'm tickled to death to get to talk to the judge. Got a great deal of respect for him.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead, Tiny.
I'm trying to get out of my radio range.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I've got radio playing in two places. Judge, I would like your take on the immigration situation in this country. I thought that we passed a law in 1926 to we were done taking the people in, and then a few prayers and since then have kind of added to it and et cetera. Obama, he let them in to get some votes, is the story. I'd like to know your story on that. The judges that fight this immigration, the lawyers that fight this immigration, and the Democrat Party, why they're fighting it when it's their country. They sound anti-American.
Well, we have the news coming up, so I suspect...
Give a short answer, and then just give me a quick what you're going to say after that.
Well, the answer is I think that there's some serious problems with our immigration system and some fundamentals which people have to ask that are not asking about, and I'll have to go into that a little bit later after we have the news break.
Okay. So if you want to listen, he'll answer it right after the news, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Tiny. We got Michael Kaiser next with the news headlines, and then we'll come back more with Judge Steigman. Get your emails, phone calls, and texts coming in. We burned through a half hour rather quickly, so we're going to do it again here after the news.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357.
Back on Penny for Your Thoughts on this Wednesday, the second day of May. Glad you're with us. 356-9397 is the phone number, as Gene just mentioned there. We're talking here with Justice Robert Steigman. If you have questions for him, it can be about the topics we're talking about. He's got several he's brought to the table. If there's something you want to bring up, certainly feel free to do that. I want to tell you real quick about Swanson Roofing. They take responsibility and ownership of every past customer they've had, and that's a cornerstone of their business. Swanson Roofing, the roofing dog. He's a hands-on, family-owned business. He and his wife, Melissa. Corey's a graduate from Rantoul High School in the University of Illinois. Biggest thing is they're very clean. Every job site 100% cleaned up. One of the strongest attributes of Swanson Roofing. And here's the thing. If you did not have your roof done by them previously, somebody else, and there's a lot of good people out there, but if you want these folks to take a look at your roof, even though they didn't do it, they're happy to do that, and they can help you with small repairs and help you save your roof. Maybe you don't need the entire roof replaced. Maybe it's just a portion of it. They guarantee the workmanship for the lifetime of your roof. The materials they use are guaranteed for 50 years. They want you and other customers totally satisfied. So, again, contact Swanson Roofing, the roofing dog, at 217-355-ROOF, 355-7663, or visit theroofingdog.com. All right, we were talking about immigration. Of course, all the news about the migrants coming up from Central America, it was a caravan that was as big as, 1,700, 1,700, and then it got down to 400, and then it was a couple hundred at the border. So what do you make of that situation, I guess, and overall, what's going on with our immigration?
As I've had occasion to mention in this show over many years, there are two fundamental questions, I think, Brian, that have to always be asked regarding immigration. The first question is, should this nation have any restrictions concerning who may come here to live? Just pausing right there, when I first raised this question years ago, at least 10 years ago, I remember some people thinking, what are you talking about? Of course, who would think otherwise? Well, I think we've now seen otherwise. But the second question is, if we should have any such restrictions, should they be enforced? I think these are the fundamental questions, and I would listen to Talking Heads as you do, and I rarely see these things discussed. One other aspect of this that is very troubling is an intention in the news media and among various advocates regarding this whole immigration thing to conflate two entirely separate and independent concepts, and they've, I think, largely succeeded, and I object to it, namely to conflate legal immigration with illegal aliens. So that if I have the idea that we have illegal aliens, and you see how incorrect I am to even use such a term, that the Associated Press guide says, oh, that's bad. Well, no, it isn't. It's an entirely appropriate term. And like George Orwell talked about euphemisms, that you're trying to hide the truth. That's what this is about. Illegal aliens are different from legal immigrants, people who've gone through the process appropriately. And to say that we shouldn't just let anyone come in here and we should deal with illegal aliens to maybe deport them because they're here illegally and they're aliens is not to say that you're against immigration. In my case, it's particularly kind of personal since my father was a legal immigrant who went through Ellis Island in 1923. And if I raise concerns about illegal aliens and illegal immigration, I find it objectionable when people say, well, you must be against immigration. No, I'm not. I'm just in favor of supporting the law and seeing that it's followed. In any event, going back to this particular thing, the problem is, and I'm sympathetic and understanding. That is, these people want to come and live in the United States. And those of us who are here should stop every so often and pause. And remember, I think it was some guy more clever than I who said, we Americans have won the lottery of life. You know, it's just by being born here. We didn't earn it. We just got it. And it's wonderful. And we need to preserve and protect it. Another way of looking at this is, who doesn't want to come to the United States to live? You're some parents in Nigeria struggling to support a family and concerned about having your daughters kidnapped by Boko Haram. It's not a hard decision for me. I'd want to get out. I'd want to come to the United States. Who in all of South and Central America wouldn't want to come to live in this country because it's so much better? We are, and of course, sometimes all these people who are speaking so ill of the U.S. should ask themselves, why is it that everyone wants to come here? And of course, the answer is because we are the freest, fairest, best, most inclusive, most respectful of individual rights nation ever in the history of the world. And notwithstanding how some of our intelligentsia on college campuses, including regretfully right here, haven't figured this out, the people who vote with their feet have got this figured out. The Nigerians or the Hondurans or whatever, they understand that. They want to come here. And I'm sympathetic, but I think unless we're prepared to say, yeah, sure, let's let in a billion Chinese and 800 million Indians and then hundreds of millions of other folks, this might be a strain on what we know to be the United States, and I don't think it's feasible. That's really what this is about, it seems to me. And I'd like to see these two fundamental questions asked of the so-called immigration advocates. Do you think there should be some limits? And if so, what should they be, and should they be enforced?
All right. We got a full bank of calls here, so let's get to it. Bill, you're on with the judge. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just tuned in at the break, so I don't know if this, I doubt this has been talked about, but when I was young, we were taught to have great pride in our justice system. We were told even, you know, the average citizen could take it all the way to the Supreme Court if they feel like they've been wrong. Obviously, that's not true in most cases. I was interested in the process, how it either goes to the United States Supreme Court or state Supreme Court. How does a case get passed on to a higher court? Who has to prove it, and what's the process of that?
Okay, good question.
Okay. All right, thank you, Bill.
Your essential point is an excellent one, and that is this. And it's something, again, we should not take for granted. citizens in this country are entitled to expect, and I think it's the reality, that if they have disputes or if they've been harmed or wronged in some fashion, they should be able to go to court to have these matters resolved. And resolved there by a jury or a judge, that it will be fair, it will be consistent, it will be equal protection under the law, there won't be bias in favor of one side or the other, and it's a decision which will be respected and upheld, and it's possible that there might be mistakes. After all, I'm in the appellate court. You know, that's as some of the trial judges say, we grade their papers. Well, they don't always like it. Kind of the nickname is we're the common enemy, at least in the eyes of the trial judges. So if you lose at the trial level, you have an absolute right, and this is an important point to mention, you have an absolute right to appeal that loss, criminal case, civil case, whatever the nature of the case may be, to the appellate court. That's where I and my colleagues on the appellate court come into play. And we decide cases in panels of three, and we decide whether or not essentially justice was done at the lower level, whether the court provided the fair trial that the parties are entitled to. And if you've lost there and the appellate court rules against you, you still have the right to seek further review in the Illinois Supreme Court. But the great majority of these cases don't go any further. That is, the Illinois Supreme Court five times a year decides which cases from the appellate court they will review. And over the years, I've noticed they grant maybe 8-10% of the total number of petitions asking to review decisions of the appellate court. But you still have the right to request that. And if you lose there, you can try to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and there your chances are even far less. But the point is, you do have a forum, and it's here. And one of the wonderful things about our forum here is our judiciary is independent. That means we are independent from the government. We judges are just required to do the best we can to decide the cases before us. That's really a privilege that most people in the world don't enjoy. I had occasion to speak to a bunch of Chinese executives, banking people, over the years when they were here attending programs. And, you know, over sitting at my dining room table where it's just us folks, so to speak, I knew I was in the legal business. I'd asked them their views about the Chinese judicial system. And over the years, to a person, they indicated that they had no respect at all. They thought it was essentially corrupt, and significantly that the government put its heavy thumb on how these cases should resolve themselves. Steve Beckett, who is a fellow who's sometimes on the show and is a very knowledgeable guy in criminal law and procedure, has spent some time in China, I believe, talking to him and talking to other people in China and pointing out just how really the Chinese criminal justice system doesn't even deserve that title. I mean, it's really, you know, the idea about having an attorney to defend your rights and to speak vigorously for you, this is not something that happens elsewhere. So we have the system in this country. I'm proud to say it works. Is it flawless? Of course not. But it's like any other human system. It's flawed. But I think it's the best. I've been around a long time and I've studied lots of systems. I don't think there's a better system anywhere. And I think for the most part, we get the job done well, and we get the job done right.
All right, back to the phones here for Justice Robert Steigman. Lawrence, good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I wish to briefly return to the discussion about the special prosecutor law. So I'm seeking your assessment on what I'm now going to say. It appears to me that this law is an A-plus example of another poorly written law by the Congress.
Well, I think that's true, but this is really, I should explain, the special prosecutor law is gone, the one that Kenneth Starr used and that was used back then. That's been repealed and expired. This is within the executive branch of government. That's what's going on here. There's no special statutory provision. The president has asked for a special counsel to look into this, and that's why the president could fire him. I mean, you'd say, well, this is kind of strange and odd. But here's a point that too many people don't understand about the executive branch of government and the whole business about was there obstruction of justice that occurred. The executive branch of government is a pyramid, and that means the president is at the top and all the people down take their authority from the president, who appoints them. The attorney general, the head of Homeland Security, the director of the FBI, and so forth. The Department of Justice and the attorney general and the FBI are not independent agents. Let me say that again. They're not independent agents. They work at the pleasure of the president of the United States. The president of the United States can, and maybe people say he shouldn't, but he can talk about investigations he wants done or other things he doesn't want done. As a matter of fact, you may recall at a time when there was a lot of people talking about Hillary Clinton's emails and it was a crime, I remember hearing Barack Obama saying, as president of the United States, well, this wasn't really it wasn't really anything criminal there. It's Hillary was being sloppy, and there was no real problem here. Well, he's the president of the United States. What message do you suppose that sends to the people within the Department of Justice? And as a matter of fact, what if he told the people in the Department of Justice, I looked into this, I don't think there's anything here for Hillary Clinton's criminal investigation, so stop it. Is that obstruction of justice? The answer is no. Why not? Because they work for him. He's the boss. I don't understand why it is that the media doesn't seem to understand this. So the point being, well, I don't like that. I think it's corrupt action. I think it's bad. Well, that's why we have elections every 4 years, and you can vote them out. Or if the Congress thought this was so awful, the crime and misdemeanors of impeachment, they'll say that, well, this constitutes high crime and misdemeanors. But the point is, all of these people, James Comey, the attorney general, everybody else worked at the pleasure of the president of the United States, just as Barack Obama was president. They worked for him, too. He can fire or hire them as he wishes.
All right. Well, by what legal authority, then, is Mueller operating?
Because he was asked to do this by the attorney general of the United States, Rod Rosenstein, the acting attorney general, who could fire him tomorrow. And the president could fire Rosenstein. The point is, that's why Alan Dershowitz, who we talked about at the beginning of this program, months ago said, you can't have an obstruction of justice on the president because the president is the boss. You know, it'd be like saying, putting it in more local terms. You remember we had this business about Professor, I think, Rosenstein or something, and he was in the bathroom at the State Farm Center, and the local state's attorney decided not to prosecute. Was that an obstruction of justice? Well, no. She's the boss. That's her call. She says no, and maybe there was going to be further investigation. Maybe the U of I police would do it further. Would it have been obstruction of justice? He said, don't bother because I'm not going to file charges. The answer is no. Because she's the boss. That's her call. Now, would people dislike it? Perhaps. That's why we have elections.
Right. Well, it is certainly true that the state's attorney is supposed to protect the people's tax money and spend it wisely.
Yep. All right, Lawrence.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Back with more. We've got Dave and John and the news coming up. Back with the judge in a moment. All right, president tweeting today, and then we'll get to Dave, who's up next. He says they don't want to turn over documents to Congress. What are they afraid of? Why so much redacting? Why such unequal justice? At some point, I'll have no choice but to use the powers granted to the presidency and get involved, just like Judge Steigman said. No, the last part he didn't add.
Well, I think it's clear proof, Brian. He must be listening to this show.
He's listening to what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, we got about a minute and a half here, but go ahead.
Hey, Judge, always love your reasoning and the way you approach topics.
Thank you.
Yes. So what is this supposed incentive that Democrats in our county claim that our judges and law enforcement have to fill our jails with bodies? This is an argument that a person that wants to be appointed to the county board has said she's also an attorney, which is really troubling that she has this opinion of judges and law enforcement, whom she would probably work closely with depending on her type of law. But what is this supposed incentive that judges and law enforcement have to fill our jails with bodies?
Well, okay. I've been at it a long time, and I missed the memo, Dave. I didn't get it. Judges are in an entirely passive position. That is, we don't go out and arrest people, and we wait for these cases to show up in our courtrooms, brought by the state's attorney, when people have been arrested. I think, you know, the cops have good jobs, but they don't need, you know, they're not, there's no concern, gee, if we stop arresting people, are we going to be laid off? I don't think so. I think they're arresting people. This is a self-selection. The people they're arresting have engaged in criminal behavior, causing them to be arrested.
All right. We've got the news here coming up at 10. John, if you want to call me back right after the news, we'll do that next on WDWS Champaign-Urbana.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And welcome back. Penny for Your Thoughts continues on News Talk 1400 DWS as we visit here with Justice Robert Steigman. He's been doing this for many years, all these years here on Penny for Your Thoughts. And we're getting his thoughts on the current issues of the day. Your thoughts as well. Your questions for him, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. And email us talk at WDWS.com. We hope you're continuing to vote at WDWS.com for the People's Choice. It's your favorite law firm, radio station, barbecue place, manicure place, golf course, auto dealership, or any of 144 other categories. Vote at WDWS.com, the People's Choice from News Gazette Media and Central Illinois Credit Union. All right, the president tweeted right before the top of the hour. It was almost like he was listening to the show. Because the judge here had mentioned about what the president could do. He'd looked at an article. Someone was recommending that he just declassify everything. He has the power to do that in all of this. And he said a rigged system, this is what the president tweeted, they don't want to turn over documents to Congress. What are they afraid of? Why so much redacting? Why such unequal justice? At some point, I'll have no choice but to use the powers granted to the presidency and get involved. And
well,
following your advice.
I think so. I'd like to see him do it. And he's right to be frustrated, the Department of Justice and these other documents. Here, and what makes this so attractive to order all of this stuff declassified, all of it released right now, is he can say, I'm aligning myself with the right of the people, the right of the people to know that the best disinfectant is transparency and sunlight. It's like lifting up the rock and seeing what's underneath. All released now. I hope, you know, like Alan Dershowitz said, don't fire anybody. That's just going to create a political storm. He has the authority to do it. Don't do it. It's not necessary. Instead, order this stuff all declassified and released. This is Kimberly Strassel's article from April 26th in the Wall Street Journal. As Dershowitz says, fire nobody, don't do that. But the other thing some other commentator said he could consider was pardons. You don't have to fire Mueller, but you can pardon all of these people and say this is a hoax and it's a joke. And just like he pardoned Scooter Libby, he could Mike Flynn and all of these people and say, I'm not firing Mueller, but this stuff is crazy. I'm not going to let it continue.
All right, back to the phones here. John called us back. Hi, John. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk about the legal relationship between Rob Rosenstein and President Trump and Comey and President Trump. About 20 years ago, I was asked to talk to a class of brokers that were studying at Parkland. Bob Glass asked me to come and talk to them about the duties of a broker is going to owe to his client. And so I had to do a little study and go back to some of my bar exam books that you went through when you study for your bar, and to prepare for the class. And I had about 15 minutes to talk, and I did some study, and I came across this, and I think it's helped me pretty well in the last 20 years after that. But I was a lawyer, and so I'll just state it now. The subject we're, the area of law we're talking about is the law of agency. It's of what the duties that a principal owes to an agency. And it really doesn't matter whether or not it's fiduciary relationship or not, although the duties of a fiduciary, of course, are higher than those of just a plain old agent. But here's what the most succinct example of what those duties are. And they used a term that stuck in my mind, and I think will help other people stick in their mind about the duties of a principal as to its agent, and they're called the LORNA duties. That's L-O-R-N-A. The first duty is a duty of loyalty. The second duty is a duty of always obedience. The third duty is a duty of reasonable care. The fourth duty is a duty of notification. And the fifth duty is a duty of accounting.
Mean those are the duties owed by the agent to the principal.
Correct.
Okay, not the correct. Principal to
these
the agent.
These are the duties that an agent owes to its principal.
Right.
And what's troubling is that I see that Comey, who went to the University of Chicago Law School, that had about a 50% pass rate the first time they took the bar.
Yeah, but they were philosophers.
They were philosophers. And so he's unaware of the duties and he's like, well, the president asked me about a duty of loyalty. Well, that's the first duty that an agent owes his principal. And I'd just like to get your comments on that.
Okay.
Well, actually, your points are excellent ones. And one of the problems is this, and a few people have talked about it. If you are in the government and you're working for the president and you think he's engaging in improper behavior, like Sally Yates, you remember her back at the time when was going to ignore the president's order and she was acting attorney general at the moment, your choices are limited but clearly there. You can carry out the president's order, you can express your reservations to the president about doing it, but he's the president, or you can quit and explain why. I'm not going to carry this out. I quit, and here's why. Curtain C, which is the one she adopted, is one that doesn't exist under the law, but it was amazing that the media lionized her. Curtain C was, he said it. I'm not quitting, but I'm going to disregard it. For all the reasons you've mentioned, that's not an option you have when you're working for somebody else. You're working for the president and the government. A good example, Brad and I were talking about it right here, is here we are in a newspaper building. Some reporter has done a great story in a series. It's got some story he wants to run because it will show maybe some local corruption, and runs it by the editor and says, here it is. And the editor says, no, I don't want to run it for whatever reason. I don't think it's sufficiently sourced. I dislike it, whatever. Would it be an appropriate response from the reporter to say, well, wait a minute, I have a First Amendment right here. You can't say that. And I think the editor would say, no, you see, you work for me. I'm in charge. And you can write whatever you want for your own newspaper, but this is the News Gazette, and I'm in charge here. The same kind of thing applies. Would that be obstruction of justice? Or to put it in a different context, we have an assistant state's attorney locally in Champaign County who's working with the police and is pursuing some investigation and runs it by the local elected state's attorney and says, I think we got something there. I want to take it to grand jury and maybe file charges. And the local state's attorney says, no. Is that obstruction of justice? By the way, I'm going back now 45 years. I was in that position. And
the premise of obstruction of justice is you have a crime.
Well, assuming that there was some question about there was a theft or a fraud that occurred and some local car dealership was involved, and I think there's enough here, is an obstruction of justice for the boss to tell me when I'm an assistant state's attorney, no, I don't think there's enough, stop pursuing it? Since that happened to me like 45 years ago, it never occurred to me at the time that this was obstruction of justice. It occurred to me at the time that he's the boss and I'm not.
Right. Under the duty of obedience.
Yes. Hmm.
Interesting questions, John. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. All right. We're at 10:20. We'll take a break. We've got more callers coming up next.
Hello. I'm Dan Holder from...
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS.
We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400, this Wednesday, May 2nd. Happy birthday to my sister. Hey, if you've heard us talking about the Woods basement systems for years, now since 1986, the Woods family has helped over 55,000 homeowners. They've dealt with basement or crawl space cracks, the foundation walls. They deal with mold, pests of all types, and smells. Those can crop up, especially in the springtime once the air conditioner is turned on. We invite you to call the area's highest rated, most reviewed contractor, Woods Basement Systems. And did you know that crawl space wall cracks, what they do is they let water leak into your crawl space. Most of that water gets trapped on top of the vapor barrier, too, and it evaporates up and into your home. Mold loves that. Get your free estimate, protect your home's investment. And again, they've been winners of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award, something they're very, very proud of. Remember, Woods Basement estimates do not cost you anything. How much is it costing you to not fix the problem? You can go online to woodsbasementsystems.com or give them a call at 888-935-4333. Woods Basement Systems, around since 1986, again, helping over 55,000 homeowners, and these are big issues, so give them a call or go to the website and check them out. All right, real quick, a question from earlier, and this is a text that came in very early, and you can give me a short answer on this. With our county government, like on Champaign County Board, can you name the list of required services that the county is required to do? I know under Illinois state law, the nursing home is not one of them.
Well, I think it's an excellent question because that's where the focus has to be and what they're required to do. They're required to come up with a court system to fund that. They're required to come up with a sheriff's department to fund that, a county jail. I think they are required also to county highways is another one. But they're limited. A lot of what the county chooses to do, they're not required to do. But these are the fundamentals to the criminal justice system, civil justice system as well, courts, a jail, sheriff for local law enforcement, and beyond that, the nursing home is something which, and by the way, I've been involved in government for a long time. It's not correct to say that there's all this is waste necessarily. Sometimes it might be. It's a question of priorities. That is, and I worked my first job out of law school, I was working for the legislature, and I saw all these ideas and fund this, fund that, and many of them were very sound and good, but the question is kind of like a family budget. What can you afford? You know, it would be wonderful to go to the French Riviera this year and cruise the Mediterranean, but we can't afford to do that. Similarly, not that running the nursing home is the French Riviera, but you have to decide, you know, if the family budget has said, well, we pay the rent, we pay our mortgage, we pay our utilities, we pay the stuff that's required, so to speak, what do we have left after that, and how much should we maybe save, and so forth. So it's an excellent question, and that's really the answer.
It's like prioritizing. Do I get the 500 channel option from the satellite dish, or do I get rabbit ears and put
absolutely
them on the TV?
Right. You don't, you know, how much we want to spend. And for many years, you know, we didn't have premium channels, and that was the decision we made.
Right. Let's go back to the phones here. Kent is up next for the judge. Hi, Kent.
Good morning. Good morning, Judge Steigman.
Good morning.
It's always a pleasure to hear you speak. I think you are a treasure.
Well, thank you.
One thing that you had, well, I was struck by your comment that you do not have the answers to. The Anna Walls question. Well, I think that you have the foundation of the answer right there with your previous statement of I'm here from the government, and I'm here to ... fill in the blank. I trace a lot of this right back to the Johnson administration with their policies of subsidizing single-parent families and illegitimate children. I think those policies not only destroyed the black family, but it destroyed families.
Well, I think you're right, and I want to continue to emphasize this is nothing to do with race. This is everything to do with the need to have a father present. And I read some studies about how in Britain we're having a similar situation, a great increase in single mother births where there's no father in the home and providing the kind of loving guidance and discipline that fathers can and should provide. And they're having the same sorts of problems in school that we're having here. And the situation in Britain, where I read about it, this was an overwhelmingly white population. So when we talk about the need to have a father in the home and a father being a father, that has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with human nature, and it also has nothing to do to denigrate the single mothers who are doing the best they can often in these circumstances. It's not as if they necessarily chose this role, but it's just harder to be a single mother and to provide the kind of guidance for males in particular who need to be civilized. I use that term advisedly. Mm-hmm. As having been a father myself and a boy growing up who needed to be civilized.
Yes, but you know what? This kind of cuts both ways here, is that when you incentivize for some people the opportunity, well, if I can find the right word, when you incentivize behavior that leads to single-parent families, and in some cases it's glorified as it is in our society now, and after you've had generation after generation, we're not cattle, but that feed from the teeth of the government, it is next to impossible to wean. Now, therefore, lies a problem that I think is almost to the point of the trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Well, I think you're right. And also, one of the other difficulties is, I think, that serves to denigrate what I always thought is the essential dignity and worth of having a job and earning a paycheck and doing a job well, and the legitimate, you know, when people talk about taking pride, well, you can't fool yourself. You know, if you've done a good job and you've earned your money, and that's really an important part of self-worth and dignity, and I think that's an important thing to seek out.
Well, that's a hard thing, though, when you instill, especially, as I've seen it, in the Champaign school system, in a lot of cases, where you promote grievance over achievement and chaos over order.
Okay. Thank
all
you.
Right. Hey, thanks for the call, Kent.
You bet. Hey, it's always great to hear you guys. Thanks.
Hey, thank you. And real quick, we'll answer this after the break. Does Mueller get to subpoena the president or even question him when zero evidence has been found in his investigation? Because I think the questions are fake. They sound like they come from a jealous junior high kid, not an adult. That's from Bill.
Well, I, as I mentioned at the very beginning, this is all uncharted area. I don't know how I think the president could decide to visit with Mueller, answer questions, even appear in front of the grand jury. But like Alan Dershowitz said, he thinks that would be unwise. And the other thing is, I have serious doubts whether a sitting president can be forced to do any of that. But we don't know. I mean, this has not come up.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more. We've got callers, more texts, and we've got a question he wants to ask James Comey. We'll do it next. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts as we work our way through a Wednesday. It's sunny and in the upper 70s. What are we headed high today of? 83. So we're working our way there. Chance of rain at 30%, but nice and warm finally. A good farming weather. A lot of farmers have been out. I've seen that working the fields. Tomorrow morning, by the way, in the first hour, Jack Wilkie is going to join us. He's an immigration attorney. We're going to get some questions answered, basic questions, too. And obviously there's a lot of immigration stories that are out there that are, you know, have been in the news for several years now. But, you know, what does it take to become a citizen? What is a green card? What are students that are here at the university? What are they here on? What happens if they overstay their visa? All these things that I do, I'm like, I really don't know how all this works. So he's going to come in tomorrow morning at 9 and explain a lot of that. Then we've got a special event coming up on Sunday at one of our local churches. It involves Kayla Mueller. You may have heard that story from 2 or 3 years ago. She was working in refugee camps in Syria, was killed. We're going to talk to her parents about that. They're going to be speaking on Sunday at one of the local churches, so we'll get into that a little bit on Friday. Judge Steigman is here. We've got some callers waiting, but I did want to get quickly your question
for James
Comey regarding Hillary Clinton's emails at the origination of all of this. But
in July of 2016, the first press conference he had on this whole business of emails, where he essentially exonerated her, the first press conference never should have been held, he made a statement that was really critical. He accused Hillary Clinton of extreme carelessness. And he talked about, but that wasn't enough for a criminal charge and so forth. Later on, it apparently there have been reports, and I think they're correct, but I don't know, and that's why I want to ask him, that that term was changed. What he had originally put in was gross negligence, not extreme carelessness. Now you'd say, well, what's the deal? It's a big deal, because gross negligence is a statutory term that would constitute a crime, and extreme carelessness does not. So my question, and here's James Comey going around doing all these interviews and making himself available on this book tour. How is it possible that no one in the media has asked the following questions of James Comey, which I think are the key? First, did you change, what did your draft regarding Hillary Clinton say as originally drafted? Did you have the terms in there instead of extremely careless, gross negligence? Second, did you change that and when? Third, was it on the recommendation of Andrew McCabe or somebody else? And fourth, why did you change it? Now, you think this would be all... And this is really, I think, the most significant inquiries. No one seems to have asked it. At least I haven't seen it in the media. And it seems to me that if the answers to those questions are what Comey detractors think, that really bespeaks badly of him. On the other hand, maybe there's some explanation that we can provide that would clarify that this wasn't this way. But I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, and several people have said this, so what I'm saying is nothing new, but a lot of people have said all of this, what was going on in that whole campaign the last few months of 2016, was under the assumption that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president. There wasn't any doubt.
I think that explains a lot of this behavior, and how all of these memos and the page struck stuff and what Andy McCabe did, nobody didn't think any of this would ever have been revealed had Hillary won.
Mm-hmm. And the script flipped, of course, on that, even up to the first couple hours of coverage, it was expected she was going to win. Let's go to Richard. Hi, Richard.
Yes, good morning, Brian, and thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning.
I've been a landlord for about 40 years, and I can tell you at this point in time it is getting increasingly difficult to get quality renters. Many of them know the law and know that they can essentially circumvent the law, and once they are in the housing, they can ignore paying, and basically they are living in a fraudulent condition. They are knowing that they are defrauding you of rent, and yet they can never be charged with a felony. When if they were to write me a check that bounced, they could be they could find themselves in jail fairly easily. Why is the law such that a person who doesn't pay rent cannot be charged with fraud?
Well,
okay. Thanks, Richard. We'll let him answer that. Thank
it's an
you.
Excellent okay. question. That's how the legislature has drafted it. And there's this balance here, because sometimes we're dealing with people who, in good faith, signed up and maybe paid rent. I've seen lots of these cases over the years. They paid rent for some period of time, and then they stopped. And maybe it's because they have no money, and whatever the reason, or they choose to do otherwise, or some problems in their lives. There's a procedure, the Forcible Entry and Detainer Act, where landlords can essentially seek to get them evicted. But it's you have some hoops to jump through, and it's a difficult business. we in the courts have to be fair to everybody concerned. And on the one hand, I think sometimes judges bend over backwards and give people too much time to get their affairs in order before they're actually evicted. And when the judges have reason to believe that essentially we're requiring the landlord to subsidize these people unfairly. And there's no reason for that. But the legislature has provided this legal framework. We judges have to provide for it as best we can. And the legislature has clearly determined that the inability to pay rent is not going to be a criminal offense. Could they have said otherwise? Perhaps, but they haven't.
79 degrees in downtown Champaign, and we'll come back with our final thoughts from Judge Steigman after this. From the text line, Castle Heating and Cooling text line, from Bill, he says, Eric Holder ignored a subpoena. President Trump should, too. He can't be arrested anyway. So that's on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. The judge always brings in a whole stack of stuff, spreads it out. I think we touched maybe on one-tenth of it. But you got something here at the end you want to...
Yes, I do. Just a quick comment. I wish I had more time to go into it. And this whole business of free speech and how it's so precious. Here's some stories from Britain. This is from the Metropolitan Police in London. What is a hate crime? This is what the police say. If someone does something that isn't a criminal offense, but the victim or anyone else believes it was motivated by prejudice or hate, we would class this as a hate incident. Though what the perpetrator has done may not be against the law, the reasons for doing it are. This means it may be possible to charge them with an offense. Now, pausing there, this is really chilling stuff. This is the police telling you what you did may not be criminal, but if you were motivated by prejudice or hate, it's classified as a hate incident, and we're going to check you out, Barnhart, and make sure to see if your thoughts are impure, and maybe we'll charge you with a crime.
Yeah. Well, you get into thoughts, then you are getting Orwellian.
The thought police. This is what we're dealing with, and this is why we have to protect our First Amendment. Yeah.
Judge Steigman, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, bro.
Oh, man, it's great to have you here. We'll do it again. All right, we'll come back with more Penny for Your Thoughts tomorrow. We've got the news up next and the Rush Limbaugh Show after that on WDWS. Champaign-Urbana, have a great Wednesday, everybody.